All right. Dexter Gordon and Johnny Griffin, both on tenor saxes and performing live. This is a composition by Gordon at Carnegie Hall in 1976. George Gables is on piano, Rufus Reed is on bass, and Eddie Gladden on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm your truce lead, and I'm delighted to be with you again after the weekend. So much has happened since just a few days. We weren't together for just a few days, and it seems like an apocalypse just, came upon the earth. All kinds of crazy things happening, but that's the way life is. Well, first, let me tell you about the developments. It's very exciting. I opened up the program to individuals who felt that they can do something impressive and help us understand a subject in greater detail, whatever that subject is. And they were to be thinking of themselves as presenters. And of course, as part of presenting, they will eventually have to take questions from the audience. And I've spoken to several of them. And we have a few dates nailed down already. I'm very excited about it. And the subject matters as well that they will be tackling. I do want to stress that this is not an indication that whatever you hear is the right perspective on it. No, it's just a perspective. And we are helping people to get used to the idea of occupying space, popular space, public space, call it what you will, and to express points of view, even if people don't agree. I don't care about that. I want to know that you have invested a great deal of integrity in whatever it is, whatever your subject matter is, that we can see the work, we can hear the work, and we can appreciate the work. And we hopefully will get, on the flip side of that, the same kind of regard from those who will be presenting. So we will start with our presentations pretty soon, as soon as we get everybody in gear. But so far, the response has been very, very encouraging. I'm very excited about it. They're very excited about it. And I hope you will be very excited about it. That's coming soon. So just a few more things we have to tidy up. And I understand people may be apprehensive. That's okay. It's all right. You're among friends and family, as a matter of fact. You're more than among friends. You're among family. So the more we get used to this, the more we get used to the idea of engaging each other and those listening at a whole different level. It's very important. When people who are out and about in the community, people who are talking to people, can have a moment to express an idea, you'd be surprised at how great a difference that could make. We had a huge tragedy in the Bronx over the weekend. We had 19 people, including 9 children, dying in a fire that consumed an entire apartment building. That was bad enough. That was very bad, very sad. But right away, I mean, nothing was lost. No time was lost in insinuations and in racist attitudes that went along with the so-called reporting of this tragedy. I wondered if any of you picked up on that as you listened to the reports coming in. Of course, everybody's saying the same thing, from the mayor, the newly elected mayor, talking about what a great tragedy it is. Everybody agrees it's a tragedy. But some, the reporting troubles me quite a bit, and so we should call it out. We don't have time for this nonsense anymore. We never had time for it in the first place, but we have to end it. Whenever it pops up, we have to smash it. And it popped up all over the place. I listened to the news reports, and everybody was talking about what was so painfully obvious. A lot of people dying at the same time as a result of a tragic fire. Okay, we get that. But I wondered if you picked up on some other things that were included in reports. Not just one report, but several reports took the same angle. And it really bothered me that we are here, this is 2022, and we're still dealing with stuff, leftover animus from the 1940s and 50s. And this is being done by professionals. So how do we get a city to heal at all when these kinds of attitudes are presented to us as reporting? If you have an idea about what I'm talking about, give us a call and let's see where we go with that. It was on top of the tragedy, it was doubly tragic, I thought. The good thing is it may not have been as ever-present as one would expect or one would assume. I think somebody pulled somebody else's coat saying, okay, we got it. Back off a little bit. It's beginning to be embarrassing. But you see, things happen in the course of, quote, reporting that really lend themselves to and take us along as a whole society to the depths where they're operating, and so we never get out of the hole. They drag us back in, and it is not reporting, not what I saw. I used to teach reporting. I used to edit a newspaper. I kind of know what it is, what reporting is, and what it sounds like and what it looks like. And I was astonished. Well, that's really overstating the case, because this is par for the course in many cases. You have people who, because they have access to a microphone or to a computer or to whatever means by which they generate reports, they can't cut themselves away from obvious insults. And just tell us the news. Please tell us the news. And not those same feelings that you're walking around with every single day. So 888-874-4888. If you managed to detect something other than reporting, please give a call. Let us know what it is and what it meant to you that these things popped up in the course of reporting on what was supposed to be by itself a tremendous tragedy. The greater tragedy is that many news reporters didn't seem to have improved, and the editors, etc., the people that they work for. They satisfied the newsroom demands. Come back with a really good story. All right, we'll start off with Mohammed from New York. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrees.
Good afternoon.
Hope all is well.
Me too.
This is some of the underlying things that the reporters didn't talk about. And when you look at problems like a fire like that, which you always do, or any problem, we as clinicians or psychoanalysts, we look at causes. And when I heard the news, it really saddened me and it angered me, because they said that a heater had went bad or exploded or something and set the fire. Now, the problem with that is now in these apartments, heat is so expensive, these so-called, they're not landlords, they're building buyers or owners, they don't give you enough heat, so you have to go out and buy yourself a heater. When I was living in Queens and I just recently moved, I never got enough heat, but yet the guy kept raising the rent. And I read the law about how the temperature was supposed to be at a certain temperature from, you know, from the program on WBAI. It come on right after Nene Rosenberg. And the guy wouldn't give me no heat. I told him, read the law to him. And then he kept raising the rent. So I just bought myself a place. And my main thing was heat, because it just leaves you angry when you don't get enough heat in the wintertime. So in the next place I went to, I was asking them, could I control the heat? They said, no, you can't control it, but it's going to be so hot, you're going to need an air conditioner in the wintertime. And moving out and getting myself a little co-op, I ran into the same problem. The heat wasn't enough, so I wound up buying a heater. And so that really made me careful. It's that heater, and it's these people, the electric, whatever the heating bill is too high, and people can't afford it, so they get them heaters. And that just... it saddened me, because I'm going through the same thing here, and I'm going to have to leave here. So you look at the cause of the problem. These so-called, they're not landlords. I don't like to call them no lord. They are not providing enough heat. In that building, and I know where it is because I worked all over the Bronx.
Okay. We got it.
School.
So what stood out to you? I mean, you gave us a narrative, but what in that narrative was particularly telling for you?
It was just sadness for me to see those children die and those people, you know, lose their property and so many people injured and harmed because a certain group won't provide enough heat, you know, when people are paying their rents. It's just...
Yes, you said that already. I'm asking, go beyond where you have been before in this discussion and tell us what fundamentally upset you in... hearing the reports or seeing the reports?
Well, I said this. I don't know what to answer you. I don't think I have an answer, but it just angered me.
Have the answer. You just don't think so. But you'll hear it in a minute. Thanks so much for getting us started today. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Diane from New York, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking
my call. Hello, Diane.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Yes.
Wait, let me get... Okay, can you hear me now?
Close.
Okay, I heard the story very early today, but because I was moving around, I didn't hear where it was. Okay, so as soon as I heard it was the number of stories in the building, now my mind is clicking. And then they mentioned that there was some... the heater, okay? And so I found something strange in terms of the number of stories of the building. I think they mentioned, I wasn't sure, 20 or 19 floors, if that's correct. And I'm thinking in a building that size, they should have, you know, it should be a non-flammable building, okay? So, and usually the incident is like when they talk about smoke conditions, when there's a fire, it would be that you need to be closing the doors, you know, in the staircases because that's going to kind of keep the fire from the smoke from spreading. But then I also heard, before I knew where it was, that also they were mentioning the number of different countries people were coming from, African places. And I'm saying, oh, so why is that so interesting? Why is that of such interest?
But bingo! Bingo! Bingo!
Did I miss? Well, why is that an interest? I don't usually hear that. When they
not only did they mention that they were African, they kept talking about them being Muslims.
Oh, I didn't hear that part. Okay.
Oh, yes. Oh,
can I finish my...
The majority of them were Muslims.
Oh, I didn't hear that part. I knew they were African.
They immediately put people listening to the story or watching the story, what is the point? What point are you making?
What's the point? Yeah, what was the point they were trying to make? I'm thinking, well, the smoke is smoke. People are, you know, dying. Who cares where they're from? That's my thought. It should be who cares where they're from. But it sounds like now when I later I hear that it's the Bronx, now it's like, oh, you know, they always want to dump on the Bronx.
Have you ever heard a story covered about a fire where a very important point of interest, way up in the story, is the religion or the culture of the people dying? Have you heard, if you've listened to stories, I'm sure there's been several fires.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't heard, I don't usually hear that. That's what kind of struck me as, that there was that about, but then I'm like, yeah, we know what that's about. We know
Well, you see, this is a point I'm making. You will never hear a story in the Bronx itself.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say of a fire where they say the majority of people are Irish Catholic.
Right, right. No, not ever.
You wouldn't hear that.
No, I know that.
But for some reason, what was important to most of the reporters reporting on this story was to make mention, first of all, that they came from, the majority of people came from Gambia.
Oh, okay.
And they were Muslims. And I'm saying, well, wait a minute. So now we have an additional qualification whenever somebody goes to cover a fire. Who died?
Yeah, now
we have Catholics, we have Presbyterians, we have, they're all dying.
I'm thinking, why are you telling me that? Why would you be telling people that? Is it because you want us to be more sympathetic or less sympathetic? You know, or, oh, isn't that too bad, or... Oh, it's just them Muslims. We don't care about them. Is that something that's going on there?
And to a person reporting on the story, it was part of the story. It was intended to bring your attention that these were Muslims. The people, most of the people dying were Muslims, and the people occupying the building, many of them, are Muslims. I know the Bronx very well.
Yeah.
I used to live in the Bronx. But I tell you, you would never hear coverage of a fire in which people's religion or any peculiar aspect, any specific aspect of their lives would be a focal point when you have 19 people, including 9 children, who are dead.
Right.
Well, I want to thank you. You've got good ears. Keep your ears.
Keep my ears. Oh, yeah, I have good hearing, real good hearing. They've told me that. My doctor said that. Okay.
Thank you.
All right,
thank
I'll
you
be
so
left.
Much. Yeah, thank you.
Care.
Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Yeah.
Hello, Ed.
Yeah. On the same observation came to me this morning when I first heard about the tragedy. I was listening on a local news station. And, the first report I heard, in the first, I think, two or three sentences, they referred to most of the people being from Ghana or West Africa. Then I heard
Gambia. Yes.
Excuse me. Gambia, West Africa. I believe Ghana, too, if I'm not mistaken. But in any case, that and then the fact that of their religious preference. And it struck me as odd because, as you said before, anytime there's a tragedy of that magnitude, we're dealing with humanity. I mean, we don't, you know, the tag of whatever your religious beliefs are or whatever your quote-unquote race or nationality is, isn't a prevalent headline in the story. And I believe it has to do with first of all, with the lack of credible news sources now. We don't have news. We have infotainment. You know, it's got to be sexy. It's got to be controversial. You know, the old saying, if it bleeds, it leads. I think that's what our main media sources have been evolved in. And just a general lack of humanity. I mean, you know, 9 children died, 19 people died. Why would you even bring that up? I mean, that at best, that should be tertiary, if mentioned at all. So in the course of a human tragedy such as this.
But I want to ask you something. I mean, you're not a reporter. I understand that. Mm-hmm. But neither was Diane. Neither was Muhammad. And you're getting messages that were kind of plastered over the reporting. And it had to do with distinguishing the people, the dead, by race and by religion. I don't get that that's the way you cover a fire. But in the aftermath of the fire, there's still questions that have not been raised. Could you make, do you have an idea of one or two of them?
Well, one or two, I mean, from a building aspect, because I've been involved in construction and building maintenance for the better part of my life. Where were the fire-rated doors? If someone's leaving, if someone's trying to evacuate from a fire, the last thing on their mind is closing or opening the door. They're trying to get out. Smoke, insulation. I've been in a fire, and smoke and heat and confusion. So, but there should be fire-rated doors. Where were they? Where's the building inspector? There are certain materials that are used in construction that have a fire rating that should last a certain amount of time in the event of a tragedy like a fire. There's certain ventilation standards, especially in high-story buildings, because they usually have a central ventilation and air conditioning system, and they have fire vents. They have fire dampers that will impede oxygen to feed the fire. So all of these things, I mean, for in a modern building, for that many people to die, there's got to be questions of construction. There's got to be questions of maintenance. There's got to be questions of culpability and responsibility. Who owns this building? Who is the maintenance? Who performs service? Those things would be at the forefront. If I was a reporter, those things would be at my forefront. How do 19 people die in my building? Yeah.
And they would be in the forefront because it is logical. Yeah. These are logical questions that you would want answered. Did you see anybody answering these kinds of questions or even asking them?
Well, no, not as of yet. I mean, those would be forefront. Because like you said, it's logical based on my prior experience and based on the fact that 19 people died in what we're going into the 21st century. These buildings, especially in the Bronx, are not maintained well. And that should be forefront. That should have been at the top of the mayor's list. That should have been at the top of anybody's list. How can we prevent this tragedy and what caused it? That was the main.
And this does not require any special training. You're not a specially trained to be a fireman or you trained to be a fire investigator. These are naturally occurring questions. If you are alive and breathing, these are the things that you will want to ask for. Thank you so much. Now, here's the other point. This building was said to have been built in 1972. Built in 1972 by the federal government. Okay. See, I'm not even going to go so deep. I'm going to ask you just the logical questions that any well-trained reporter would be asking. What are some of these questions? Gwen, you're on the air. The buildings were built in 1974 under the auspices of the federal government. What does that supposed to mean to you?
Well, I already know what it means. I know for there was a very interesting show on PBS the other night about this. All of the federal projects do not have fire systems in them. They don't have sprinkler systems, not any of them. So not one of these federal buildings was built with a sprinkler system in place. In addition to that, it goes on over to expensive luxury buildings as well. Luxury buildings do not have sprinkler systems in. And the reason why they don't have sprinkler systems, and only one reason, is because the people that are making the buildings, the developers, think it's too expensive to put in there. So they simply don't put them in there. So these buildings are all fire traps. Now, as far as the federally owned buildings, in my opinion, and I think it's well substantiated, are purposely not cared for. They're purposely allowed to run down into incredible, just horrible things happen. For example, the projects in New York City all have the same elevator system they had when the projects were built. So it's exactly the same thing from the 1950s. These are really dangerous places, and the fix is a very, very easy fix. Putting a sprinkler system in, yeah, it would be expensive, but it would save a lot of lives, and it should be extended over into luxury buildings as well. And it's as usual. The excuse for not doing it, it always comes down to the bottom line. And now the bottom line is that we have 19 deaths in the Bronx, and we have, I think, 16 deaths in Philadelphia. And coincidence that they were both buildings that are federally run buildings. So I'm not at all surprised, but I would ask people if they're interested to look at, you can probably look at the archives of PBS and see they did a very interesting show on the new mega buildings in New York, which are over 100 stories high, as well as the federal buildings. And they talk specifically about the fire hazards that they have upon them. And it was very interesting to me to see the time.
I want to bring your attention to something. I mean, you were quite detailed, and I thank you for that, because it means that you were paying attention. But what is the thing that brings us all together that makes it inescapable when you look at Philadelphia, you look at the Bronx, what do you see?
I see that these are all, so far what I'm seeing is that the bulk of these tragedies are happening in federally owned buildings or federally built buildings, and they're happening to people that are poor and people of color. That's what I see. And that life's just not as important as everybody else. And I see, but I also see, you know, the factor of capitalism, you know, it doesn't have any bounds, and it starts creeping up, too. So anybody who thinks they're safe because they have a little more money, hang on to your hat. It just hasn't gotten to you yet. It'll get there. Just hasn't gotten there yet.
I am talking, in the case of the Bronx, 48 years. 48 years in which you had no attention being paid to what?
At all.
Most people would say, well, you ought to have a fire escape.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And you know what else?
But there were no fire escapes.
You know what else? I got to tell you that was, Mott Haven was my district when I ran, and I went to every single one of those projects. And every single one, every time had elevators that were out of order. It's very, very important that elevators are maintained properly because there's no escape. And in these properties, when there's a fire, the people start charging down the steps while the firemen are trying to charge up the steps, which creates even more chaos. But I will tell you, it is a blatant prejudice. It's blatantly racist. It's blatantly prejudiced. It's blatantly classist. And it's in your face. People can't get any help at all ever. They can call to look purple in the face to get an elevator fixed. My friend had to walk up 11 flights of steps last month. He's 71 years old because the elevators are out. Now, funny thing is, you know, I have to say that I called their office and I raised holy hell because I ran for the district. They happen to know who I am, and it did get fixed. But it's just terrible that people have to go through these hoops just to maintain a regular life, just to go in and out of your building. His building is swamped in sewage. You want to know? You walk in on the first floor, the sewage is coming up from below the ground, and this has been going on for a year. How we worked on starting a massive rent strike in 2013 at the Lexington House projects. There was no stoves for 3 months. They had no gas. They gave them all a hot plate. And this happens regularly. This happens all over this place. But I also found, and they're doing it to make the people as uncomfortable as possible to get them to leave. Now I hear other people in New York that are rent stabilized that are going through the hot plate thing. And again, it's about getting people out that are paying lower rents and bringing in those richer people so that they can, you know, make more money. So it, like I said, it'll go to the poorest first and the middle class, but ultimately, it's a way of getting rid of people, and it's blatantly racist. And I absolutely think it's
okay.
Such a tragedy.
Well, you see, people, if we listen to the news, all you need to know is that there was a fire, and unfortunately, you know, 19 people are dead. That's it.
That's all.
End of story.
Horrible.
Thanks, Gwen, for calling in today and contributing. We'll take this break and come right back to your observations right after this. You see what I mean? You cannot just accept a story out there and everybody's parroting the same thing. Oh, well, it was a tragic fire from the mayor on down. He should be. This is his first major test. And he should be very clear. Because I can tell you, any major borough, Brooklyn, Queens, Staten Island, the Bronx, this is how people live because they are forced to live this way. We'll be right back. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking not about the fire, the real fire that should burn within all of us, that it took 48 years for the consequences of neglect and racism to surface. And people, the news people, the people who are trained to tell us what's going on, are more interested in telling us that they're Muslims, coming, most of them, from the Gambia. 19 people killed. And I'm looking at 48 years of negligence. Gordon from the Bronx, you're on the air.
And racism to surface.
Hello, Gordon.
Yes, I'm here.
You're on the air.
Latrice. Oh, Mom, we miss you in New York, you know. Anyway, let me tell you, yeah, you know I do, but let me tell you what is really the problem. The problem is that these buildings are built similar like the one I'm in. Now, most of those people had subsidy vouchers. Okay, so the lady was talking about economics. They're making actually more money with those people in there because those vouchers, those people's rent was being paid throughout the pandemic. There was no moratorium, you know, because the money is coming to either HPD Section 8 or the city subsidy program. So that cancels out the money issue. What is the issue is a construction issue. There was a rash of apartment break-ins. Those apartments don't have firewalls in between them. So literally, if I take a circular drill, I could drill a hole through that sheetrock, through another level of sheetrock and what they call wonder board, okay, and go straight to the apartment next door to me. Now, consequently, if that's the case, you know that fire is going to burn right through to the next apartments, and that's what was happening. That's why the whole building got consumed with fire, because it was burning through the walls of the, each apartment. So, for example, the fire started, I believe, on the fourth or fifth floor. I'm not sure. But whatever the case might be, how did it get all the way up? Because it goes up the staircase, right? And in some cases, burned through the floor of the structure, because that's why you saw the fire coming out of all those different apartments all the way going up. I actually walked over there. I live in Crotona, so it was like a stone's throw away. You know, I could just walk through the park and get right over there, and I saw for myself. There's another underlying issue in terms of the inspections, and unfortunately, I don't believe, I can't prove anything, I'm just speculating now, that I don't believe that those type of codes were addressed in that older building. And my building's a little newer, but it's the same situation in terms of there's no firewall between apartments. I've noticed, before I came on the air, I did a little research. And they're building a lot of row houses in the Bronx, three family homes connected together with no firewalls. So we have a potential situation where one house can catch on fire and then the whole row goes. So the tragedy goes deeper than just the loss at this point. It's like almost intentional to me, because these are engineers. I'm not an engineer, but logical sense would tell me if I'm building a structure that people are going to be in, I need to kind of separate them, maybe put two, you know, bricks or some, I don't know what they use, but certainly wonder board is not sufficient enough to separate two structures, and that's what's going on. Yeah, so
I hear you.
I don't know. I just wanted to add that to the mix. And there's one more thing that I would like to say. It's a little wing off of what it is, but it's still into the housing situation. A lot of people are losing their homes here in New York by a method called accommodation recording. I'm a paralegal and I worked in title companies. And title companies are actually filing papers that are given to them by lawyers without vetting. And when I questioned it on the job, they said, oh, that's an accommodation. Just take it in, just take it into the to the register. That was my job, to take in, you know, documents and file on block and lots. But if they're not vetting these documents, how do they know if they're fraudulent or real? By vetting, I mean, you know, we check the assignee to make sure that the assignee is the proper assignee and that the dates are correct. Well, madam, I respectfully submit that title company I work for, I will email you and give you the whole details on this matter. But I have identified fraudulent situations. So the people lose their homes and then they're purchased by LLCs. LLCs now constitute 45% of the title ownership of properties in the Bronx, right? So LLCs don't vote. So now what you've created is a tenant class on a block, like say in the Northeast Bronx, for example. You have one particular block that I identified that has like 18 homes on the block, and 10 of which are owned by LLCs, and so they're all renters. And so now you've changed the whole complexion of the Northeast Bronx by putting renters, pride in home ownership is very important. It keeps a consistent type of atmosphere in a neighborhood. But when you have these private homes that appear to be private homes, and each one of those apartments have renters in it, no one owns it. And not only do they do that, but they actually rent them out as rooms. So you have a three-family house rented out as rooms.
Yes.
And this is what's happening in Northeast Bronx. I reported this to
it's
the city senator,
all
dear
over,
Bailey,
New York
and they don't
city.
Respond. I believe
you go to Chinatown, for example, you'd be amazed at how people are living.
Yes.
Some of them are living in rooms so small you can't stand up.
Well, ma'am, I was searching for an apartment for 6 months, and I could not move a queen-size bed into the so-called master bedroom. I had to sell my bed and buy a twin bed to have space in my room to move around. So this is what, and these, that particular room, apartment in other places, they actually have two people in there instead of one. And they're all paying separate rent. I hope you understand what I'm saying. Like, if you could
visualize. Oh, I know
visualize,
what you're saying.
You know
this
what I mean?
What
if
happens
you could visualize
in,
a three-bedroom apartment with four people in it.
All over New York City. And they know it. They know
yes,
it.
Yes, they do.
But they
Madam,
have
I
never
reported
gone
it,
after
and they don't do nothing.
Unscrupulous people. Thank you very much, Gordon, for your
You're welcome.
Today.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Trees, how's it going?
Okay, thanks. How about you?
All right, I want to put an outside perspective of this reporting.
I'm not hearing you so well. You sound muffled.
Oh. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay. I want to give an outside perspective of this and, you know, your previous callers who are, you know, all live in the New York area have given some very good information, and some of which, if not most of it, is happening also here in Chicago when you're talking about building inspections and regulators. Matter of fact, I just saw a story not too long ago about a woman and her four-month-old baby with no heat. So, and the landlord or none of the building owners got fined or anything, so... some of that is, you know, if not most of it's happening here. But what was interesting, and you touched on it earlier about the reporting. So I did see it like on mainstream media, CNN, I believe, and, you know, it just talked about the fire in the Bronx and, you know, people dead, including children. And then I saw something where it says I think the people that the victims were from Gambia, immigrants, is that
yes.
correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so they were talking, they had a quote from the Gambian embassy. And so I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I contrast that to the story that happened in Surfside, Florida, back in June. And I remember that story was plastered all over the news, like, it was like, you know, headline news. It was interrupting a lot of programs, and I was like, "Wow, okay." And
I'm referring. I just want people to know you're referring to the story of the collapse of a huge building, residential building, in which so many people, more than 90 people, died.
Mm-hmm. Now, two different. As far as the situations, you have two different situations. You know, one is, you know, the one in New York, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's a public housing complex, and then you have the one
it was built Surfside. By the federal government in 1974.
Okay, all right. You guys got to fill
72,
me in.
72, sorry.
Okay, no, that's fine. You know, you guys are filling me in on this, but you know, I was just contrasting that with the story of the Surfside collapse, and not to say that it was any less devastating, because it was very devastating, but
yes.
The reporting of it. And what was so interesting is that when you look at mainstream media, and you know, you were talking about the identification of the victims. You know, it basically, for me at least, I didn't see anything until like about a week later that most of those victims over in Surfside were Jewish. And I, you know, when you said that about when the one caller had got the got correct about, you know, how they reported it, you know, I was like, wow, that's pretty interesting. So, like I said, looking at it from an outsider, you know, and looking at those two stories, it made me think about the Surfside, Florida collapse and how they reported it contrasted to this one, because it was like, this was kind of like, you know, several pages down on their website. Like, I couldn't, like, you'd have to scroll down on the CNN website just to even find the story. And, you know, this is, you know, it was very tragic when you talk about it. So, but it was so far down, you know, in their reporting, I was like, okay, compared to the Surfside incident where it was headline news. So
it was headline news, and it remained headline news for several months.
Yes,
and it's about
exactly.
to be repeated, because now there are all kinds of issues about how to rebuild and who is going to get to stay there, as if we don't know. And they're talking about the redevelopment of this area. It's going to be another Jewish enclave. That's what it's designed to be. It was designed to be that. It remained that. It was that. And I told a story about how I discovered Surfside. Mm-hmm. I actually got lost driving on my way to see a friend, and was surrounded by this group of people who looked like they were straight out of the Twilight Zone. They surrounded the car. They didn't say anything. They just looked at me, including children, which communicated to me, "You're in the wrong place, lady. Get out. This is not where you're supposed to be." So it's about to repeat itself.
Wow. That kind of felt like I was in Israel about 3 years ago, and there were certain parts of Israel where I went to where that I felt that same way. Like, okay, why are they looking at me like I have three eyes? Yeah.
You know what my great crime was at that time? I stopped to have some yogurt. Yeah. And
wow.
Immediately they objected to my presence in the community. Thanks so much, Henry, for calling. I want to get a couple more calls in. Jackie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, and to the PRN family. Okay, I'm going to be very brief. I want to say, like, three things. First of all, the community of the people who were killed in the fire, that most of them are Muslims, and they should be buried by their own religious traditions within 24 hours. I didn't hear anybody mention aid for the families in terms of making sure that their religious and burial practices are taken care of. I thought that that was important, and that should have been brought out. If they're going to say that they're Muslims, then they should at least also say, I'm sure there's aid and assistance that needs to be rendered. The other
Correct.
Thing is, what's going to happen to the people who are burned out? This is another problem. Now they're faced with homelessness. And I have three points. The other point is that the mayor showed compassion, but I didn't think it was necessary for him to mention that the city's not going to involve ICE. I thought that was inappropriate. And the final, the last thing is everybody who's called in, I agree with them 200%. The man from the Gordon who talked about the LLCs in New York, I mean, first of all, housing has always been one of the serious issues in perpetrating and continuing discrimination in this country. And this whole issue of building buildings without proper safeguards, this is ongoing. And right now in downtown Brooklyn, they're building buildings that's like 90 stories tall. I mean, it's just crazy. There's no fire equipment that can even reach these buildings. So that is another problem. But part of the issue, you know, lies with HUD, the federal government, and also the city and state inspectors. So we're dealing with a national crisis. I'm sure if you go into other cities and find out housing for people of limited income, you're going to find the same problem. So this is should be a national
A part
agenda.
Of it, too, Jackie, is the community isn't doing anything.
I don't think people
There has to be some kind of righteous indignation and anger stemming from the community.
Okay.
Forcing changes that have gone unheeded for decades. I just referenced 48 years in this case for the buildings to come into compliance with the modern world.
But just like
in terms
of her friend that's living under such adverse conditions, and Muhammad and everybody's calling up talking about adverse housing conditions. When you live under adverse housing conditions, you don't have the strength or the energy to organize. I always argued that all the people that live in the New York City Housing Authority, like 300,000 people, that's enough to form a political party in and of itself. But the people have to be aware of you, Therese. When you're in a state of constant oppression, you're not even aware after a while that you're...
I understand, oppressed. But this is your home. You know, you're fighting for yourself and your family and your neighbors. You cannot be... You know, you can't be casual about this. This has to be a priority item, and people have to show their anger. That's what it is, anger, which is the correct
I agree with you, but I think one of the things that America has said, we're going to launch an intensive investigation, and that's the difference between the Surfside collapse and what's going on in the housing, subsidized housing in the Bronx. There was an immediate investigation regarding the construction of the Surfside property. They brought in engineers. So we have to see, are they going to bring in here in New York, are they going to bring in all these people to examine?
The whole thing with Surfside is that it's a sham. It's a sham. Everybody knows how Surfside came to be. Somebody decided this must be a Jewish enclave. You're not Jewish, you don't belong here. They commandeered control of the political structure. They controlled the money, the taxes. And that's why people were looking at me like, what the heck are you doing here?
No, I understand that. But what I'm saying in terms of lack of investigation and the construction engineers and safety reports, it's very similar because it all comes back to the money. It may be a different population, it may be a different class of people, but it all comes back to the profit. And that's what this
is. It comes back to money, but we cannot sever from what we know to be at the base of it. You either want a community or you don't. If you want to live in a community, you have to create it. You have to protect it. You have to design it. You cannot have it both ways, where you, well, I'm going to be here for 2 years. Then you don't have the spirit of community. You shouldn't go there. Go someplace where you can make your exit in 2 years and nobody would feel upset. But if you are purporting to be an enlightened person and you're going to put your feet down and you're going to build a community, that takes commitment and dedication. And there's no two ways about it.
You
either admit or you're not.
But I'm saying the people, the populace, the hardworking everyday people just trying to make ends meet, a lot of them don't even have the political awareness or understanding of what you're talking about.
Well, they will have to be prepared for the consequences of inaction and uninvolvement. We have to fish for cut bait.
Other
people do that. Other people have the time I don't. I have children. I have to work two jobs. Okay, everybody's got some reason to bow out. But there will come a time, and I believe it's very soon, as they say, you have to fish or cut bait.
But the
Thanks
other
so much,
is
Jackie, for your call, but we're out of time. You have to move on. Thank you all for calling. But I wanted you to see for yourself. This is not just a story about 19 people dying because it was a horrific fire. We know the story. All of us. We know this story very well. The thing we have to really get serious about is stopping it and getting involved and saying, this stops now. And we have to hold media people accountable, too. What are you telling me about the religion of the people who died? Like you care. So thank you so much for thinking. This is what is so, in a way, so comforting, to come to a forum where people are thinking. And when you encourage people to think, they go way beyond where they expected to go. Thanks so much. We'll meet up again tomorrow and talk some more. Bye-bye.